I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. My colleague and friend, Michael Vlahos, who teaches history at Johns Hopkins, to observe the phenomenon now underway of the Great Migration. Thousands, tens of thousands, eventually millions of people dreaming that this is their moment to migrate north, east, west to the United States of America, the dream destination, right now. And Michael and I, because we enjoy asking the question, are we now in a civil war, are always looking around for historical analogies. Michael and I sometimes debate whether history repeats itself. I'm going to take the extreme position. You bet it does. Okay. Why that matters is because the matter of a civil war is 2,000 years old. It began with our Roman ancestors. We derive our institutions and much of our authority for those institutions from the Romans, our architecture, our laws, our governance, the Senate, all that matches up. And why we pay attention to the Romans having invented civil war is that there are cycles. Well, there appear to be cycles in civilizations that rise to become empires, which is what's happened to the United States. Maybe we didn't seek it, but then again, here it is. Michael and I, for these last weeks, have been observing the Great Migration, people coming north, tragically, but inevitably coming north because they want to be part of Rome, the new Rome, America. America's troubled, but that doesn't bother them given where they're coming from. Michael now is looking at one aspect in a new article he's written for American Conservative, one aspect of this cycle of Republic, Empire, Dissolution. This cycle of civil war, of strife, of triumvirates, of big men, of backstabbing. This cycle includes the elite, not just the blue elite, but the red elite, both elites. The Romans called them optimates. They were a party, not really a class. They were enormously wealthy, and they brought their children in as well to be members of the Senate, to be members of the ruling class. Once it became an empire and you had an emperor, they centered all their ambitions on the emperor, but still, it was the optimates who ruled. Now, Michael observes, I think quite correctly, that the optimates are the equivalent of our elite. He has rules or guidelines or suggestions of how the optimates behave epoch after epoch. There have been many civilizations between Rome and the United States, many empires that rise and fall and rise again with similar patterns. Right now, the pattern we're observing is one that Caesar prospered in recognizing and taking advantage of. That was the great migration of the Gallic tribes, chiefly the Helvetii, but other tribes were moving as well. This is 58, 57, 56 BCE, before Caesar initiated what became the Roman Civil War. The tribes were moving across Gaul. He told them to stop, the Nervi as well. He told them to stop. They were enormously powerful. He almost lost, but he eventually won out and defeated the super boss of all the tribes, Vercingetorix, who was taken back to Rome and eventually executed after a triumph. However, it's that migration that matters, because Michael and I have observed what Caesar could not know, what Rome could not know, was that the future was those tribes becoming Europe, and the part of Europe that came to America, and the part of America that recognizes that we have linkages to Europe and all the way back to Rome. There, Michael, enough of an introduction. What do we now see about the migration, the great migration, the tribes moving north from the Northern Triangle, or moving north via the Northern Triangle, the coming from Nepal, coming from Iraq, coming from Southeast Asia? What do we observe about those tribes and the optimates? Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening, John. There are two movements that may or may not intersect, but they are to some extent convergent. And one movement is, as you describe, this giant migration, and the migration has just recently, again, as you described, overwhelmed the capacity of this nation to stop. I mean, there is no break. There is no rolling back. There's no way to contain the kind of flood that is moving into this country. The second movement, which we've talked about many times, is the movement toward a consolidation of rule of elites. And by that, I mean not the kind of heterogeneous patchwork quilt of local elites countrywide that has characterized American life since our War of Independence, but rather a monolithic ruling class of the top decile, which means the top 10% of Americans, into a unitary ruling class, which is absolutely coterminous to the Roman optimates. And this is a society of rule that is now fully exercising its power. And one of the distractions of the last several years with Mr. Trump was the emergence of what I call a leader cult. And the leader cult is exactly what you saw with Caesar 2,000 years ago, which is to say the emergence of an idea turned into an office of emperor who would have a special, perhaps even mystical relationship with the people. And this relationship is something that you've seen throughout American history, from Jackson to Roosevelt to FDR to Reagan and ultimately to Trump. You have this idea that there is a special leader who embodies the dreams and aspirations of the people. But going against that, of course, is the continuing parallel existence of an elite. And when that elite becomes too powerful, as it has in America, and remember, the elite in America for the 40 years after World War II had only about that decile that I described, had only about 35% of national wealth. Now that elite has way over 50%. And that elite is in the saddle. And so the idea of having any kind of special emperor-people relationship that you've seen in earlier times in American history, in American life, is put by the wayside. And what you have now is the rule of an elite class. And you see this explicitly in this administration, where the emperor is kind of a pasteboard cutout who's providing sort of therapeutic platitudes to keep the people quiet, but the people have no special connection anymore to those who rule. And so this is a nation in which the ruling elites have essentially discarded the citizens, who are now reduced to a kind of, I don't know. It's not yet a serf-like status, although it is for some, but it's definitely an underclass. And it is the decision of these elites to let the vast migrations that are roiling and pushing at the U.S. to just come in, because that creates an encouraging sort of a free labor market for them, but it also destroys the idea of citizens of being a part of the governance of the country, because it drags down the former middle class world of America, the vision that emerged after World War II, and the free citizenry. It drags them down into a kind of third world status, even as it opens the floodgates for illiterate, untutored, desperately poor immigrants to surge into our nation. And the masses of people then become something that can be controlled from above, and that actually turn this nation into a kind of oligarchic aristocracy, where the optimates are a ruling class increasingly separated, and separated along hard lines from the rest of the people. And this is an unimaginable outcome from the standpoint of the founders and even Americans 40 or 50 years ago. It is a very, very different society.
Michael, it was one analysis of Rome. Cato the Younger pushed it when he was alive, but afterwards it was taken up, that Rome went bad when it conquered Carthage, that the plunder that came to Rome, the riches that came to Rome, created an optimates that was completely discontinuous with everyone else. In addition, Rome was successful in Spain, in near Spain and far Spain. Rome was successful in Cisalpine Gulf. All of that brought in slaves. And the equestrian class and the Roman citizens were dislodged from their daily activities. The slaves were everywhere for the optimates. I'm mentioning that because I wonder, Michael, in reviewing the last 70 years, if 1945 was our Carthage, Cartago delenda est, that in destroying the threat, the existential threat of the Germans and eventually the Russians as well, two warlike nations, yes, we destroyed Carthage and made ourselves enormously wealthy. With reach around the world, and now we're the centerpiece of everybody's dreams because we're so wealthy. But they're when they arrive here, or even when they haven't arrived here yet, we treat them as if we own them.
Well, you know, America has gone through two corrupt phases in its relatively short time as an independent nation. And the first was the great corruption of the slave power, as right, the abolitionists right, called it. And you had this massive accumulation of wealth in human flesh, and that was supported by the financial resources of New York City. And that was the world right before the Civil War.
Right. I mentioned a factoid here. Half or more than half of all the slaves in America arrived after between 1776 and 1850, right in there. That's
absolutely. And that was a tremendously inequitable world, and it was just like today. Well, that was destroyed in the Civil War, and the destruction of wealth, mostly in the South, actually created a new opportunity for American democracy, but then that was sunk in the world of, you know, the robber barons and the accumulation of wealth that went all the way till 1929. And then, with the Great Depression and World War II, there was a second massive destruction of wealth. And what you had coming out in 1945 was a much more equitable society.
Yes. Yes.
And that lasted for 40 years. And then it began to go downhill again into the world we have now.
Just a moment, Michael. Let's talk about what is to be done, if anything, when we come back. Michael Vlahos, identifying the optimates, the elite, as living in a world that is quite separate from the ones that Michael and I live in. Maybe you're there. Maybe you're an optimates listening to us. We do not live as you do. We have great anxiety about what happened to Rome. Maybe you don't. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network.